Always nice to talk some basketball with Rick Barry, the Hall of Fame basketball player who played 14 years of pro ball, 10 of them in the NBA, 4 of them in the ABA, and, of course, the only player to lead the NCAA, NBA, ABA in scoring. And he was a career 90% free throw shooter. Rick, I wanted to have you on because I wanted to talk about a number of things in professional basketball, and I know you always to be kind of a straight shooter. And that is, we're running a poll on the air asking, do you think Dwight Howard will ever find a team he'll be happy with? And a majority of the fans are voting no on that. I'm just wondering how you see that situation.
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think he's a bad person. Clifford Ray, old teammate from the Warriors, worked with him when he was a rookie. And, you know, said he's really a good guy. I've spoken to him and met him. I think he's a good person. I think it would have been great if Clifford Ray could have stayed with him his whole career to work with on his game. He'd be a different player today. But he really needs to – he just needs to work on his game to be able to shoot free throws because he's a liability at the end of the game right now. And I think he's going to be, you know, happy there down in Houston playing if he's got some nice players around him and if they're successful and they're winning. I mean, money shouldn't be an issue for him anymore. He's got more money than he'd ever spend for the rest of his life unless he's crazy and foolish. But he's not a bad person, so I think he's getting a little bit of a bum rap. I actually like Dwight quite a bit.
You know, I've heard the same thing about him being a nice person. I think the question is that, you know, what is he looking for from a basketball sense that would make him happy?
Well, I think he'd like to be able to be on a team that has a chance to win. And not only that, but to have, you know, have guys that are, you know, people that he can relate to that are going to go out and play hard, and would certainly Harden is going to do that, and some of the players down there on the Rockets. So I think that he just has to decide, look, I got to go out and focus on my game, play my game as well as I can play, and hope that the management is going to surround me with the right personnel in order to be able to be successful. And that's what he has to just focus on and not be overly concerned with whether or not he likes his teammates or things of that nature. You don't have to like your teammates to be successful. They don't have to like you. It's just a matter of whether you get on the court and you play good basketball together.
You know, I have a friend of mine, Donald Foyle, who I'm sure you know, who was in Orlando with him, and they kind of kept him around to some degree at the end of his career in order to mentor a little bit Dwight Howard. And he said it was always tough for him because he didn't feel comfortable with some of the coaching decisions that were made, that if he took a shot from the outside and missed it, he kind of looked over his shoulder. How do you deal with a guy who is considered to be a superstar on a team?
Well, you know, if I ever had gotten the chance to coach at that level, I think the most important thing you have to do is to establish a relationship with your great players. That's what Greg Popovich did down in San Antonio. He established a relationship with David Robinson and Tim Duncan, and look what it's done for him. You have to have your star player be on the same page with you. If he's not on the same page with you and he doesn't buy into what you're trying to do, wow, you know, you've got a real problem on your hands. So you've got to develop that relationship, get them to trust what it is that you're doing, explain to them why you're doing the things that you're doing, and if you earn that respect, then you have an opportunity to be successful.
After a couple of championships, people are continuing to talk about the comparison between Michael Jordan and LeBron James, which I've never thought is really fair because it's a different time as how the game is played. The rules are a little bit different, all of that stuff. But when you take a look at the makeup of those two guys, what is it that they consistently did well, Rick?
Well, they're both great all-around players. The difference being is LeBron is so much stronger and so bigger and stronger and more powerful. But I don't know why people want to compare them. I mean, one's a two guard and one's a three. I mean, so there are different things you have to do playing those positions. And everybody in basketball always wants to talk about who's the greatest player of all time. And it's the most ridiculous thing ever. And it just, I'm just befuddled by why people want to continue to do that. You have to have different skills to play the different positions. Are you going to say that LeBron and Michael are better than Wilt Chamberlain was? I mean, you can't compare it. A center has to do more things. Wilt Chamberlain's the greatest center. Michael's the greatest two, LeBron's the greatest three. It makes it very simple.
You know, the one thing that I found as a commonality between the two, and really between not only those two, but anybody who is a great of the game that they play, and you fall into this category, Rick, and that is something that Michael said to me once. He said, when the game is on the line, I want to be the one to determine the outcome. If I succeed, I'll take the glory. If I fail, I'll take the blame. And not everybody is comfortable with this. Since you were one of those that were like Michael, like LeBron, like anybody else who's been a superstar in their respective sports, explain that a little bit more to me and the acceptance of being willing to fail or as well as succeed.
Well, I think it all comes down to confidence. You have to believe in yourself. You have to have confidence in your ability to do what it is that you spent your life training to do. And so what is the difference of me taking a shot in the first 5 seconds of the game or in the last 5 seconds? The only difference is that the last 5 seconds, the game might be determined one way or another. But are the mechanics of the shot any different? No. So, and he's absolutely right. I mean, here's the deal. If I take the last shot, especially when you're at home, okay, and you're at home, you take the last shot and you miss it and you're down one and you lose. Okay, there are going to be a few fans out there. You know, I say there's 20,000 people in the stands just for conversation. 2,000 of them might say, oh, that bum Barry blew the shot. We lost the game. 18,000 of them are fans of yours. Oh, God, he came so close. We almost won. But what if I make the shot? 20,000 people think I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. I mean, so the advantages of what you are able to achieve by being the hero as opposed to what the negative aspects are being the GOAT far outweigh it. So I'm always wanted to be the hero. I told people, I said, if I could have played every game of my life, coming down to the last possession with the ball in my hands, I would have thought I died and went to heaven. That's what I'd lived for. That's what I trained for. That's the exciting part of it. I mean, winning the game by 20, 30 points, I mean, that's nice to do it. You get a little risk, but I wanted to play. I mean, in fact, when that happened, hell, I knew I wasn't going to get to play that many minutes. I'm going to be sitting on the bench. I'd rather be out there on the court playing.
One thing else that I noted over the years is that the great players also work on their game, whether they're in their second year or in their 10th year, that they go out there and they try to improve on anything. Was it that way for you?
Oh, for sure. What you have to do is be honest with yourself also. Evaluate the season. What did I do well? What did I not do well? The things you didn't do well are the things that you work on to improve in those areas. You should always be striving to improve to get better. The moment that you become complacent and feel that you've got the answers, that's the start of your downward spiral. It always is a situation where you're never satisfied with what you accomplished. You always want to accomplish more. Now, physically, you get to a certain point where you're not able to get better because physically you can't do the same things that you used to do. But because of your understanding and your knowledge of the game and the experience that you have, you can maintain a very high level of performance, but you're really not going to get any better.
Also, two aspects of the game that are somewhat overlooked by players who play the sport. One is the free throwing, and you were so outstanding there. You never finished worse than second in the league, 90% free throw shooter. How did you approach that, and was that a pride thing for you, Barry, as having that high percentage?
Well, of course, yeah. I took pride in everything I did. My father instilled that in me, and as far as the free throws go, it's the only part of the game you can be selfish and still help your team. Because if you shoot the highest percentage you can shoot, that's helping your team, and that's being selfish. Well, if you're worried about how many shots I get up or how many points I score, that's not necessarily the best thing for your team. So free throws are the one area you can do that, and it's the only area that's a constant. It's always the same distance, the same size ball, the same size basket. So how in the world does somebody live with themselves if you can't make 4 out of every 5 shots that you take? I mean, it really is reprehensible and inexcusable. It's just a matter of going out there and practicing and getting confidence in your ability to do it. I mean, George Johnson, you remember George, my teammate from the Warriors,
yes,
our backup center. George was a 45% free throw shooter. And I convinced him to give it a shot and try it. So I only got to work with him one season. Worked with him the one season. He didn't have it down exactly the way I wanted, but he continued with it. He left, and I wasn't with him any longer. But he got up to 80%. Now just think about Dwight Howard or what Shaq could have done if they were an 80% free throw shooter. At the end of a game, you become the go-to guy.
Rick Barry is with us, the Hall of Fame basketball player. The other aspect is playing defense. And I remember the late Dennis Johnson saying to me that his approach to playing defense, first of all, it came down to attitude. And second of all, when they got into the fourth quarter, the player that he was guarding, he wanted to make sure that that player knew he was going to have to battle for all 12 minutes of that quarter. How did you approach defense, Rick?
Well, first of all, people talk about somebody that, you know, he's a lockdown guy, he shuts people down. Well, first of all, that's a joke because no defensive player shuts down a great offensive player. It just does not happen. What you do as a defensive player against great players is you study their game, you analyze them, and great players usually don't have a glaring weakness, so you really can't force them to do something that they can't do pretty well. But what you do is make them work as hard as they have possibly can work in order to be able to achieve the results that they normally get. So let's say that I'm scoring 35 points a game, and a guy guards me, and I score 35. And people are going to look, oh, God, you know, the guy didn't do a very good job. Well, maybe I had to take 5 or 6 more shots to get those 35 than I normally take. So in essence, that player really did do a good job. I may have scored a lot of points, but he made me take more shots to do it. So that is effective. And that's what you have to really look at. But nobody's shutting somebody down. When people talk about that, I get appalled, because I would never think that I could shut somebody down. What I did is I studied it. I found out, yeah, okay, maybe there's something they can't do something exceptionally well. I'm going to try to beat them with what they don't do as well as they do something else. And I used to study the players that I played. But what I prided myself in is team defense. And that's where you win championships. If you had 5 great individual defenders, Ron, and 5 great team defenders, the 5 great individual defenders are going to do a much better job than the 5 great individual defenders, because the great individual defenders are going to get beaten by a great player a number of times, and nobody's going to be there to help. So they're going to get a lot of easy baskets. When you have 5 great team defenders, no one on that team is ever going to get an easy basket, because everybody's helping one another.
Rick Berry is with us. Rick, I know you're involved with Ecto Breakaway, that new model of shoe. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's the best basketball shoe I've ever seen. It's the only shoe that has patented technology, that's ever had patented technology, that actually can help prevent ankle sprains. Just think about it. The most prevalent injury in the sport of basketball is an ankle sprain. So if you have a shoe that you can wear that would help to minimize the chances of your getting an injury of that nature, why in the world would you not want to wear it? I've tried the shoe out. I had my son when he was in high school, my youngest guy, wearing it. It helped prevent him from breaking his ankle. He came down because he's a high leaper and such a crazy angle. There's no way anything would have prevented him from hurting himself. But the doctor said to me, he said, Rick, I can't believe he has no instability in this ankle. I told him about the shoe. He said, well, that's probably why. He said, I can't believe he didn't break his ankle. And so I'm a big believer in it. And I just don't understand why some big company wouldn't come along and just buy this company. I mean, you know, come on, it's a startup. Buy it. Now you've got the best technological shoe ever invented for the game of basketball. You would dominate the marketplace, especially with the promotions that they can do, and they get it out and let the world know about it. That's the shoe that people would be wearing, because if you're serious about playing basketball, why would you not wear the only shoe that can truly help you prevent an ankle sprain?
We've got about 90 seconds left. Speaking of your sons, 3 of the 4 of them played in the NBA, and I often wondered whether that was difficult for them because of you being a Hall of Fame basketball player, winning an NBA championship. How did you guide them as far as not letting your standard and the way you were viewed be a standard that was set upon them?
Well, I always told them that they were going to be have this giant shadow cast on them. They had to be prepared for comparisons, but not to worry about it. Just go out and be your own self, play the game as well as you can play it, and do the best that you can possibly do. So, you know, they did that. They had great careers. My son Scooter, the only one that didn't play in the NBA, the older boys, actually should have made the Boston Celtics. Bird and McHale both told me. Bird and McHale both said to me, "If you're, you know, your son was better than our number one draft pick." And unfortunately, back in those days, they had 13 no-cut contracts for the Boston Celtics, and they only had 12-man rosters. So he wound up playing overseas till he was 40. So now it's going to be fun for me to see with my youngest guy, which is easier for him since I'm not playing. And it's been a long time since I've been around the game, so it's not going to be a major factor for him. But he is going to draw some attention to himself because he does shoot underhanded free throws.
In about 40 seconds, was it hard for you to walk away from the game, Rick?
What was that?
Was it hard for you to walk away from the game?
Yeah. It wasn't. It was because I had to give up something that I love so dearly. I mean, that was one of my passions in life at that time. You know, now it's fly fishing. But, yeah, it was difficult in that regard. But I also had prepared myself to do the broadcasting. So I had something to go into that, you know, kept me active and kept me busy. And I just had the capacity to not think about the fact that I was never going to play the game again. And that saved me. A lot of people can't do that. I have the ability to put things on the back burner. So I appreciate the time. It's EKTIO.com for the shoes, EKTIO.com. Always a pleasure to talk to you. I look forward to hopefully joining you on one of your trips to visit our service people. And God bless them.
Thanks a lot, Rick. Take care.
Bye.
Rick Berry, Hall of Fame basketball player, 14 years in pro basketball, 10, of course, in the NBA, 4 in the ABA, and the only player to lead the NCAA, NBA, and ABA in scoring, and of course a great free throw shooter career-wise, 90%. We continue with more of you in Sports Byline.